Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Dave Clements, our intern minister, our music director, Hal Walker, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Peace Choir. We light our chalice for this moment, on this day, in this week. For this chance to be together in this month, in this season of our lives, and with gratitude for all of the seasons that have led us to this moment. May our hearts and minds be open to it.
And as winter solstice sounds, complimentary quiet comes. With winter arrives the sound of snowflakes falling and the fumbling footfalls of the fog rolling in. This is the season where stillness reigns. It is a quiet time. Even the birds are still. Perhaps the earth becomes quiet so that we can better hear the spirit of life, who is always whispering to us. And so I say, okay, spirit of life, I'm listening now. For our time for all story today, can I have all the young people in the audience just kind of come up here? So who can tell me what today is?
Valentine's Day.
Ah, and what?
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day. And what do you do on Valentine's Day?
Make a Valentine.
You get and make a Valentine. Well, you know, let me tell you a story. Is a young man. Yeah, are you going to get a Valentine? I hope so. So there was a. This is a story of a young man is, and it's called the Valentine Box. And you see, there's a box right here, and we're going to get to that box. But the young man's name was Blake. Yeah, I like Blake too. Oh, well, good. You'll have to make a Valentine for him. I'm glad you love your boyfriend. That's wonderful. And you know, Blake had several friends, and he wanted to make Valentines for him. But he had been going to the store, and he saw, how many times do you go to the store with your parents and you see Valentines? Anyone see those? Yeah. And he thought in his mind, I want to buy some of these Valentines. And so he had saved his money, and he went to his older brother, Connor. Yeah, Connor. Well, I'm glad you have a lot of boyfriends.
I just want a boyfriend.
Yay. So he went to Connor to ask Connor if Connor could take him to the store to buy the Valentines. But, you know, Connor was busy making a Valentine for his special friend. Yeah. So Blake went to his mom and said, Mom, can you take me to the store? You know how you go to your parents and you want them to take you to the store?
Sure.
Yeah. So, but his mom said, we have to go to Aunt Carol's house first to pick up some fabric because she was making a Valentine's dress for his little sister. So they went to Aunt Carol's house, and they got there, and of course Blake was all excited. He was thinking about the Valentines that he was going to be able to buy. But then his mom said, oh, you know, we have to get home because Grandma's coming for dinner. So they went home, and Blake was very sad because he wanted Valentines to give to his friends, just like that's what we do on Valentine's Day, right? We give to all our friends. Yeah. So Blake's mom got an idea. She remembered that up in the attic was a box, and in the box were Valentines. And so she figured that Blake and Grandma could actually make some Valentines, and Blake could then have Valentines to give to his friends to tell them what? Why do we give Valentines? To say how much we love and appreciate our friends, right? Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Why not?
Happy Valentine's Day for kids, and that's exactly what Blake did. And so, what I brought today for everybody, because Valentine's is about friendship and giving things. Yeah.
My mom just made me a Valentine for Izzy.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you know what? You have, each of you in the box are some Valentines that you can take. And these were made by some special people who... I call our grand friends because they have memory loss, but they made these so that you could take them and give them to your friends. So come up, step up here and come and get some Valentine's, and remember that Valentine's is about friendship and giving.
I came across this poem that seems to me perfect for Valentine's Day or any day that we would like to enter into a time of prayer or meditation focused upon love. It's called Fall in Love, and it was written in the early 1900s by a Jesuit priest, Father Pedro Arrupe. Nothing is more practical than finding God, than falling in love in quite absolute final ways. What you are in love with, what seizes your imagination, will affect everything. It will decide what will get you out of bed in the morning, what you do with your evenings, how you spend your weekends, what you read, whom you know, what breaks your heart, and what amazes you with joy and gratitude. Fall in love, stay in love, and it will decide everything. I invite you to join with me now in a collective prayer that we will weave together. A prayer of love. And so I invite you to take a moment to remember, to notice the places, the ways, and the moments in which you have seen or felt love this day, this week. And then as you are moved, just call out a few words to describe that moment.
The voice of a child. Neighborhood children scrambling for their sleds, eager to get into the snow.
Home. The lovely meal that my husband prepared last night.
Hogwarts. RE class.
Mozart. Choir.
Praise all praise the source of love, which shows up in many and varied manifestations. May we still our minds, open our hearts, and cast our visions wide enough to see the places it flourishes and follow where they lead. Amen, and blessed be. Sometimes a service calls for another voice, and I'm very glad today that Deborah Lynn Hook is sharing her voice with us.
Katrina Vandenberg is a contemporary award-winning poet, essayist, and professor of writing. This is her poem, Consuming Desire. I'm not making this up. In Cafe Latte's wine bar, one of the lovely co-eds at the next table touched John on the arm as if I wasn't there and said, "Excuse me, sir, but what is that naughty little dessert?" And I knew from the way that he glanced at the frothy neckline of her blouse, then immediately cast his eyes on his plate before giving a fatherly answer, he would have given up dessert 3 months for the chance to feed this one to her. I was stunned. John was hopeful. But the girl was hitting on his cake. Though she told her friend until they left she did not want any, I wish she wanted something. My husband, his cake, both at once. I wish she left insisting upon the beauty of his hands, his curls, the sublimeness of strawberries and angel food. But she was precocious, and I fear adulthood is the discipline of being above desire, cultivated after years of learning what you want and where and how, after insisting that you will one day have it. I don't ever want to stop noticing a man like the one at the bar in his loosened tie, reading the Star Tribune. I don't want to eat my cake with a baby spoon to force small bites, as women's magazines suggest. And you don't want to either, do you? You want a big piece of this world. You would love to have the whole thing.
St. John of the Cross was a 16th century Roman Catholic from Spain who has long been regarded as one of the world's greatest mystical poets. And I quote, "I did not have to ask my heart what is wanted, because of all the desires I have ever known, just one did I cling to, for it was the essence of all desire, to hold beauty in my soul's arm."
We can't ignore Valentine's Day when it falls on a Sunday. So if you haven't yet had an opportunity to be reminded of the origins of this holiday, let me assist. It's a bit murky. There are many strands. Both of them come from ancient Rome, but one of them comes from pagan history. In mid-February in ancient Rome, there was a pagan festival called Lupercalia. And this festival involved priests making ritual sacrifices of particular animals and then making whips of the hides of those animals, and dipping them in the blood of the animals, and walking through the town where the young maidens assembled, waiting to be gently slapped with the whips in hopes of a blessing for fertility in the year ahead. After the ritual, all of the maidens would put their names in an urn, and the bachelors of the town would select one, and that would be the coupling for the year, which often resulted in marriage. So that's one strand of the history of Valentine's Day. We might not know about it if it wasn't for the other strand, which is the history of Christian tradition in the 3rd century, as Christianity sought to be in relationship with people who practiced these pagan traditions. And the name for our holiday comes from one of 3 Christian saints known by the name Valentine or Valentinus, and they all have a slightly different story. All the stories are a little bit unclear about exactly what happened. The one that is my favorite, though, tells of a young man who was working to free people, Christians, who were imprisoned in Roman prisons. And as a result of his activism, he himself was thrown in a Roman prison where he was visited by the daughter of his jailer, with whom he fell in love. And before his death, he sent her a greeting, which he signed, "From your Valentine." All of the Valentines and Valentinuses, all 3 of them, have a heroic story in that way. I like that one in particular because I think that it points to something essential about what it means to be human. No matter the time in history, no matter the social location, the condition of a body or a heart or a mind, there's something in us that yearns to love. Something in us that is drawn to desire. If you have been around young children, you know that young children have that something in them, quite clearly that spark of desire. Little kids know what they want. And they are often quite passionate about explaining what it is they want and when and how. Now, they're often not quite so discerning about what is good for them or what they need. But as to their desire, they're often eloquent spokespeople. And yet, by adulthood, Some of those same passionate children will have turned into dispassionate adults. I fear the discipline of adulthood is being above desire, says the poet. She fears it because she has seen it happen, even sees some of how it happens, and I've seen it too in my own life. At various points along the way, I learned, as everyone does, the consequences of risk and the price we pay for love. If we risk, we will know failure. If we love, we will know heartache. Pain and fear can chasten a body, and sorrow can become a yoke on the spirit. Loss and struggle may tempt us to discipline in the hopes of avoiding more loss and struggle. The equation doesn't work, but it doesn't sometimes stop us from trying. Sorrow can dampen the fire within, and without even realizing it, we may find our own deepest desires have become elusive. That is part of a season in my history, maybe yours too. There are other histories. Many times I've encountered people who have learned that desire is bad, a temptation to be conquered in the quest for holiness. LGBT people in many religious traditions, for example, have suffered the impact of doctrine that regards their desire as unnatural and wrong. Sexual orientation and gender identity aside, there are plenty of religious traditions that teach sensual desire of all kind is something to be avoided, or at least to be suspicious of. Take dancing, for example. In several conservative religious traditions, dancing is considered to be immodest, frivolous, and basically a ticket to sin. In some religious traditions, you can expect to hear that desire is a demon. And I think that that can be true. And next week, we'll look at some of the ways that can happen. Some of the ways that we can find desire becomes a personal demon for us. And we'll explore some of the ways that we can free ourselves when desire becomes desperate and demanding. But today, while acknowledging the risk of desire, I want to focus on the celebration, on the gifts of desire, the pleasure and play and fun of desire. And I want to lift up the many ways in which desire can lead us to greater wholeness and even to greater holiness. Desire can bless us with relationship. Desire invites us to follow a sparks of connection. It's entirely possible to ignore those sparks. To follow desire is to take a risk to notice them and to take a risk to learn more. What are the sparks about? How can I get to know the person who kindled those sparks in me? How can I give them the opportunity to know me? How can I lean into that moment, that experience that moved something in me? Those are questions of desire. When we answer them and follow the sparks, we can be led into a beautiful range of relationships, into friendship, into romantic relationships, into committed partnerships. The desire to be known and to know informs them all. To embrace desire is to take a risk. To know and be known as friends or as lovers, we have to let ourselves be vulnerable, and being vulnerable can be really scary. I know that, you know that, but the potential reward for risking is nothing less than the possibility of love, and love is always worth the risk. When we follow our desires, they can lead us to relationship. They can also inform how we show up in those relationships. Owning up to desires helps us learn more about who we are and who we are becoming. With this knowledge, we're better equipped to be authentic with ourselves and with the ones we love. And I realize, as I am trying to explain this, how I understand it, I am making it seem like a very linear, systematic, rational thing, when in fact I feel that it is often quite chaotic, at least in my own life. I'm thinking in particular about the time that I quit a sensible, respectable job I had worked really hard to get after just a few weeks on the job. in order, and gave up the comfortable housing that came with that job in order to move across the state to move in with somebody I had only known for 3 months into a shack that did not have indoor plumbing, where I had no job and no plan. Those choices were anything but systematic, logical, and rational. I didn't even understand myself what I was doing. I only knew that I had been gripped by a desire that wouldn't let me go. And something in me was wise enough to trust that desire and follow it, despite all the evidence to the contrary. The 3 years that followed were not always easy, but they were filled with healing that I could not have anticipated, healing that changed me and changed my life. That place and those people have rippled out ever since, and they helped me become more at home in myself. That gift was made possible not by reason and not by effort and not by planning, but by trusting desire. Now, if you don't know much about Jesuits, you might be surprised to learn that Jesuits have an awful lot to say about the gifts of desire. The Reverend James Martin is a Jesuit priest, and he speaks about this in a way that I find very compelling. He says that desire is a kind of a compass, one of the primary ways that God leads people to discover who we are and what we are meant to do. Desire is a kind of a compass which is a gift from God. Our deepest desires are worthy of attention, worthy of learning how to read that compass. All the way back in the 16th century, the founder of the Jesuits, St. Ignatius of Loyola, wrote in his foundational text, The Spiritual Exercise, that people should pray for what they desire. How often have you heard that? Pray for what you desire. But not only that, he said, pray to understand your desires. He taught people to use prayer as a way of interpreting that compass, that gift of God, to find where their desires would lead to greater wholeness, to greater faithfulness, to greater holiness. And he also encouraged people to pray when their desires had become elusive, if they had entered upon a season in which their desire was suppressed. Reverend James Martin says that our deepest desires, those that lead us to become who we are God's desires for us. And sometimes the word he uses for this is vocation. But by that, he doesn't mean a job. That's what many of us think of when we hear that word vocation. It can mean a job, but it can also mean something many of us think of as an identity or a life choice, like being single or being married or being a parent. God's calling in a person's life can even be an aspiration, like aspiring to become a more kind, generous, or patient person. If we notice that desire in ourselves, he says we should follow it, because that too is part of a gift from God. I'm really drawn to this view, this way that he talks about desire as a compass that can lead us into deeper communion with ourselves, with other people, with that which is larger than ourselves, no matter how we call it. I affirm desire as a gift of our humanness and honor the ways in which it can lead us to life more whole. And I'm really taken with the idea that it's important to pray to understand the meanings of our desires. The notion that we can be consumed by a desire we don't understand resonates with my own experience. And Martin says that it can come upon us in a way that just feels emotional without clear content or meaning. It can happen when we find ourselves standing silently in the woods in the moonlight, or when we're sitting with people with whom we've just participated in some kind of religious ritual, or even when gazing upon a newborn baby and feeling overwhelmed with love and gratitude and joy, as he himself did when his first nephew was born. Martin calls these and so many experiences like them common longings. Common longings and heartfelt connections. He says many of us have had experiences like this. We feel that we are standing on the brink of something important, on the edge of something just beyond us. We experience wonder. So why don't we hear more about these times? Because many times, he concludes, we don't know how to understand them or what they mean, so we just ignore them, reject them, or deny them. We chalk them up to being overwhelmed, overwrought, overly emotional, overtired. But how would life be different for us if instead we allowed ourselves and encouraged each other to pay attention to those moments when something moves in us, even if we don't understand what it means? The heart knows what is worthy of our attention, even when our minds are uncertain and our body's messages are unclear. St. John of the Cross writes, "I didn't have to ask my heart what it wanted, because of all the desires I have ever known, just one did I cling to, for it was the essence of all desire, to hold beauty in my soul's arms." For you, the essence of desire may be different, but my wish for you this Valentine's Day is that you'll pay attention to it, pray for it, and find, perhaps before this day ends, a moment, however fleeting, in which you can hold beauty in your soul's arms. May it lead you to greater wholeness, to greater peace, and possibly even to greater holiness. Amen, and blessed be. Will the ushers come forward? So many people have been giving a gift of love this weekend here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent as they have created once again the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. It is a labor of love created by so many people, which is a gift of love to all of the children who participate. It's one of the many ways in which the people of this place share their gifts. If you are a guest this morning, we are so glad to have you among us. The offering will now be gratefully received. It is written in the book of Isaiah, "For you shall go out in joy and be led back in peace. The mountains and the hills before you shall burst into song, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands." May it be so. Go in peace.